This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
You're listening to KCBS In Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area is talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In Depth.
California Attorney General Rob Bonta has released the 2023 Hate Crimes in California report. The report highlights a whole range of data looking at hate crimes and hate-related events as reported to law enforcement and at what communities are being most affected. And the findings aren't too good for those in the LGBTQ plus community. While overall hate crime saw a slight decline from 2022 to 2023, hate incidents such as slurs being used, handing out hate material in public places, and such continue to rise, up 86% from 2022. So what does this mean for the LGBTQ plus community in California? Are things worse, and why? Welcome to KCBS In Depth, broadcasting throughout the Bay Area and streaming on the Odyssey app. I'm Mary Hughes. To take a closer look at all of this, I'm joined by Dr. Elon Meyer, Distinguished Senior Scholar of Public Policy at the Williams Institute at the UCLA School of Law. The Institute conducts independent research on sexual orientation and gender identity law and public policy, ensuring that facts, not stereotypes, inform laws, policy, and judicial decisions that affect the LGBTQ plus community. Thank you so much for joining me for this conversation on In Depth.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
So I looked over the 2023 Hate Crimes in California report, and after hate crimes and events that are centered around racial bias, LGBTQ plus hate crimes and events are the second highest in the state. Is that a shock or surprise to you with the work that you've done?
No, not at all. Unfortunately, we see this in national statistics as well. And very sadly, we continue to see anti-LGBT violence, both in general as well as in hate crimes. The data, as you mentioned, shows that it's the second highest, but also it's the one area, including anti-Jewish and anti-Muslim, where the state has seen an increase as compared to a decline overall. So both of those statistics are extremely alarming, but as I said, unfortunately not surprising to me.
Well, and you mentioned there that this is something, it's not just in California, this is something we're seeing on a national level. And I feel like, you know, steadily over the years, we have seen anti-LGBTQ plus rhetoric, and incidences seem to have been growing, especially for those in the transgender community. And it's reflected in a lot of bills that are either being passed or considered in states across the country. What do you think is behind this wave of anti-LGBTQ sentiment right now?
Well, I think Well, the first answer is it's hard to quantify or explain in any one reason. I think as a general backdrop to this, we've seen a lot of increase in all kinds of discourse that is very sharp and very hateful many times in general. In the US, and you know, we see this in the two parties, all the way down to many issues. I think the other explanation might be that anti-LGBT issues are always seem to come back in American history and really Western culture in general. There's a very deep basis for anti-LGBT. Attitudes, stereotypes, stigma, and that's another backdrop to what we're seeing. They just seems to be coming back in vengeance. I think another part of it is that right-wing people who attack LGBT people, as well as politicians and legislators, as you mentioned, a record high legislative agenda, anti-trans. I think those people who aim to attack LGBT people are seeing now that maybe transgender people are the most vulnerable and the most easy to attack, but also the area where there's, I should say, better reception in the public. And they're using this to some extent to inflame this topic and in general LGBT issues, but the transgender people are basically the main target right now because they seem to be an easy target, I think.
Well, and, you know, here we are talking about how this is something we're seeing kind of everywhere. It's not just a California thing. It is a across the country thing and the causes behind it. But I do feel that probably a lot of people here and those outside looking in would imagine that California is sort of this safe haven for those in the LGBTQ plus community. And even though we mentioned at, you know, at the start that there's an overall decline in hate crimes associated with the LGBTQ plus community when it comes to this, it's still here. It is still being seen on the rise. So what's shifted in from your perspective in California in particular that we're seeing this here in a state that I think a lot of people consider to be somewhere safe to be part of that community?
Right. And that is definitely something that most people would find surprising that we see this in California. But if you and this does raise a really difficult question for me, because I am always concerned in law and policy and how it affects violence and other types of stress against LGBT, the LGBT people experience, as well as the mental and physical health implications of this. And I view good state laws as protective. And we do find that that's in general true. But California is a huge state. It has many different communities. And at the end of the day, this is a very local thing. I think one of the best way to demonstrate that is with school boards. And we see huge diversity of school boards' attitudes, including some of the most draconian measures, all the way down to, if not literal, metaphoric book burning and notification laws attempted by school boards. So I think we need to think about hate crimes in the same way as a very local experience. It's very much based in communities and based on the atmosphere in the general public that penetrates into many, many areas. Now, when I say communities, it doesn't necessarily mean that more liberal or progressive communities are immune from that. And that's because in hate crimes, especially, we often see an increase in attacks in areas where LGBT people congregate. And for example, West Hollywood clubs would be one of those targets. So it would not be surprising to find hate crimes in areas where there are LGBT people, like pride events, bars and clubs, etc. But the overall sentiment, I think, stems from anti-LGBT attitudes in general, which give rise to the violent attack.
Well, and just to kind of step into some of the data in the report that I paid attention to, and I think this sort of plays a part in what we know and what we don't know. One notable thing that I noticed was that it talked about agency limitations, and that's referring to police departments within California who cite, you know, noted for a variety of reasons as to why they aren't able to deliver a full data look at what LGBTQ people are experiencing when we're talking about hate crimes, events, incidents, any of that. Has this long been a problem, not just here in California, but around the country, that we just don't get the full picture of what's going on?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's not a secret or anything that anybody would deny. Hate crime reporting is actually mandated by the federal government. I believe it was the first legislation that actually covered sexual orientation in federal law. But the reporting is not financed by the federal or directly by state, although California does have several efforts to collect this information. The actual reporting depends on the first encounter, which is the arrest. And so who arrests anti-LGBT crimes is the first question. What proportion of crimes are even reported to the police or called in to the police? Many times we know LGBT people avoid, as are other racial, especially minority communities, avoid calling the police for many reasons, including that they are not trusted or because they've had negative experiences. Paradoxically, on the other side of this, we also know that LGBT and other minority groups are more in need of police help because they are attacked. So the first problem is who gets called, when the police gets called, what the arresting officer does if there is in fact an arrest. And then it depends on that arresting officer to determine that there is a potentially a hate crime. Of course, later it goes to the prosecution. But if the arresting officer doesn't record it, it will never be registered as a hate crime, basically. Again, there might be some instances where the prosecutor might notice something and want to raise it, but it has to come from the arresting officer. Then if you think across the country or even across the state, staffing of two police's forces around the country and how many of them are dedicated to this question of reporting or recording, first of all, and then reporting hate crime. So there's a lot of areas where we don't, a lot of areas where this is limited information. We also know from other surveys that most LGBT people do not report to the police a hate crime. So we did a survey nationally looking at national data on crime reporting, and of the white LGBT people, only 47% report a hate crime that they reported in the survey. Of the black LGBT reporters, less than a quarter, 24%, report. So that's a huge number of people who experience violence and hate crimes, but did not report it at all. So all of these reasons, and then there's probably issues of reporting, not just recording, you know, this has to be reported up the chain to the state and federal. So these are some of the reasons why hate crime statistics are not perfect.
In-depth will return after a moment.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge. just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
Well, and I think it kind of underscores perhaps a sense in the LGBTQ plus community that even in states like California and others who have a stronger push to protect those within the community, that those laws maybe aren't doing what one would hope, or they feel that they're not protected. From the work that you've done, are there cons to when someone in the LGBTQ plus community reports an incident? Does that put them in a space of vulnerability, perhaps, even within dealing with law enforcement?
Yeah, I think, and honestly, we know this from many victims of crime, and thinking about women who are victims of sexual violence. There's shame. There is fear of how the police would react. There's fear of being public about it. For many LGBT people, there's fear of being outed. They may not know, they may have been attacked for being LGBT. Maybe they went to a club or to a pride event, but they may not be out and don't want this attention. And then honestly, for all victims, there is a sense of if you survive, then you don't need a lot of medical care or anything like that. You want to put it behind you. And so there's a lot of reasons why people don't report. And again, that's true for LGBT and non-LGBT people. But the reporting bias, meaning lack of reporting, is much higher in LGBT people.
Is there a way to improve the amount of, I mean, obviously, it's a personal individual decision of someone to come forward and say, oh, I've been attacked, or I've had this, you know, slurs directed at me, or whatever the situation may be. But on the law side of things, is there a way to make it more accessible or more possible for someone to report something? Have we made it easy enough for those in whatever community, LGBTQ or a particular race or minority, to report crimes in this state?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think, I don't know if everybody is familiar with all the ways to report. There are a lot of organizations that would try to help. And California has a helpline, a hate helpline. It's important to note here that hate incidents are not always hate crimes. You mentioned slurs, or you mentioned other types of things. They're not so a hate crime has to be a crime first. It's not a hate crime just for the hate. The hate part could be without a crime. So being screamed at near a bar, even demonstrating against LGBT pride events, is not a crime, of course, but it could be a hate incident. And California does have a hotline to call, or to, I think you can contact online as well and talk to people and report the incidents, also get help. But again, as I said before, we know that many people do not report. We asked, or we didn't ask, but we looked at people's reporting of seeking help after they've had a violent attack. And again, people tend to not do that. Like, I think more than two-thirds of them didn't seek help from any kind of agency, formal help. after an attack. So I think that goes back to what I think might be happening is, in addition to shame and stigma and wanting to put it behind you and kind of just moving on with your life as best as you can. So reporting is difficult, but I think California does make an effort to collect this information from people.
Well, and I'm glad we are, you know, we've touched on it here a couple of times now, but I'm glad we are looking at the after effects of what a victim goes through. And as you said, it can not only be hard to report, but it can be hard to seek help or assistance after this has occurred. And the mental toll that that can take on someone can be extreme. What were some of the findings of the report that you were a part of when it comes to the mental health aspect of an LGBTQ person who has gone through a situation like that and is now trying to get their life back?
Yes. So first of all, in general, we know I've done work on what is called minority stress, and minority stress refers to any kind of experiences of stressors that stem from prejudice and stigma against LGBT people. So it could be stresses that everybody experiences, like losing a job, for example, but when it is caused by prejudice or discrimination, in this case of job, that would be called a minority stressor. And we know that those could be many types of stress exposure. Of course, violence attack is a very extreme one of those and one of example. But also you mentioned before slurs, or you mentioned other types of experiences that LGBT people commonly experience. And those are annoying and difficult experiences to sustain. And we found that we did a survey on exposure to this kind of stressors in LGBT people in general. And we also looked across different generations. So we assumed that older people in the time where things were worse for LGBT people experienced more of those events. But we found that young people experienced as many, if not more sometimes, anti-gay events, anti-transgender violence, slurs, as you mentioned, and what we call everyday discrimination, which is being basically disrespected and treated unfairly in encounters with different contexts, in different contexts. So it could be in a store, in a restaurant, on the street, etc. So we know that those types of stressors are related to various mental health effects, including increased substance use, but which people do, as we know, to escape some of those experiences, not successfully, but it is a sort of coping mechanism, depression, anxiety. And as we have seen, as you probably know, for many years, a high incidence of suicide attempts in LGBT people. So all of those I connect to the experience of minority stress, and much research has shown this over the years. And I call it anti-gay violence, but it's anti-LGBT violence, is currently, as we noted, increasing, and is a major source of minority stress. So consistent with that, we found in one of our studies that people who experience hate crimes, again, this was based on national statistics, experience more physical health problems, including sleeping problems, fatigue, headaches, things like that, compared to other people who experienced also violent crimes, but they were not hate crimes. And I want to point that out, because hate crimes have a very special effect in addition to the effect that the crime itself had.
I myself am a part of the LGBTQ plus community, and I've been fortunate enough to not experience hate directly in any way, not where I grew up. And I grew up in the southern part of the United States and not here in the Bay Area. But I think, as you touched on earlier, no place is immune to hate. And that's what this report and the work that you've done has revealed, you know, over a number of years now, that this can kind of keep coming back around and does seem to keep coming back around. You know, ultimately, what can be done to move things forward for not just the LGBTQ plus community, but for all communities that are facing hate events and hate crimes? You know, what do we need to look towards here in California, and how might that be something that can also help on a national level? You know, is it all policy? Is it who we vote for? Is it getting more involved on a local level, community level, or is it, you know, all of the above? What's your perspective there?
Yeah, I mean, probably all of the above is the right answer, but I think there are a lot of issues there. I mean, the first one, maybe we have to think about interpersonal relationships. One of the things we know is that people who are familiar with LGBT people become less homophobic and by extension less transphobic. That has been true in many surveys, including even outside of the United States. So it seems to be a pretty good measure. Is maybe getting to know one another is a helpful way to learn about one another and also to learn to accept one another. I know this sounds a little Pollyannish for me to say that, but to some extent, that is, in my mind, the basis, because I really don't understand any crime, but I also don't understand hate crime. I don't understand what makes somebody get out of the house and go somewhere and try to hurt people because they're LGBT or any other. So to some basic extent, it may be about how do you learn about LGBT people? What do you learn about LGBT people? Do you know them? Do you talk to them? Do you experience LGBT people as human beings? And I think going back to the question of policy, some of the school board's actions are to me the most damaging of any policy issue we can think about, because we're talking about what we can teach children. And again, California has good laws. We have the Fair Education Act, which requires schools to teach about the history of the LGBT people in the history of California. And then you come up with a school board in California that says, we don't want to teach about Harvey Milk. And so if we don't teach about LGBT people in schools, we are not going to raise a new generation of people who are less hateful. You know, we say that anti-LGBT hate is everywhere, and that is true. But we still also have to recognize California is very different than some states that have been on the news lately, like Louisiana, Texas, Florida. And we have to recognize how much more California does. So despite the fact that we find hate everywhere, state laws could make a huge difference. And California is making a difference. We are seeing hate crimes and anti-LGBT ideology, but it is not as prevalent, and thankfully for Californians, as it is in many parts of the country.
You can find this episode and past episodes of In-Depth online at kcbsradio.com. You can also hear In-Depth episodes on the Odyssey app. Thanks for listening. For KCBS and In-Depth, I'm Mary Hughes.
Listening to K-
KCBS In Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit KCBSRadio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.